Good morning. It's great to be in the house of the Lord. Amen. I want to speak especially to those who are not here with us. We are longing for the day whenever you will be allowed to return and join back in the congregation in fellowship. I want to thank you. I want to start by thanking you so much for your prayers. This has been a hard time for us in Honduras. Things have been very rough. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes, if I could have the first slide. And I'm going to be talking about that in just a moment. But I want to take a moment just to thank you for your prayers, for packing the backpacks to help send the kids to school, for your financial support, and for the food that you guys are getting ready to pack. We are so, so excited about that. I grew up in the Philippines, Malaysia. My parents were missionaries there. I've spent almost 30 years of my life overseas. I met my wife at Taylor University, went to school there. We got married. We had a plan of originally going to the mission immediately. Things didn't quite work out that way. We spent a little bit of time here in the States, about 20 years. But then we took our five birth children and went down to Honduras on an assignment down there, and it was in response to Hurricane Mitch. And as we were kind of wrapping that up, we were looking at what would be our next assignment, because we had gone down to Honduras for 2 years originally. It's been the longest 2 years of my life now, having been down there for 20 years. We felt like God was asking us to stay. And so we spent some time looking in, and I had this feeling that God was calling me to help empower indigenous pastors. And I had this vision, and I thought, what if I could empower 50 pastors? What if I could help them? Instead of planting one church, what if I could help them plant churches? And wouldn't that be more cost productive? You'll notice I'm a business major. I think that way. I think about cost effectiveness. I think about good stewardship. I think about sweat equity, skin in the game. And so as we go through this presentation, I want you to keep that in mind about the impact that we have the opportunity to be a part of. And so I'm going to now turn this over to my daughter, who is going to give us a real quick rundown on the ministry and just kind of give us a real quick overview. And here you go, Kirsten.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. So just like he said, our original goal was we were going to work with local indigenous missionaries. They're part of the culture. They know the people. Originally, the goal was we'd be working with maybe 25 to 50 pastors, but God had other plans. So we are now partnering with over 1,200 pastors and local missionaries. These are all Honduran missionaries. And we're continuing to see that number grow. Here's a picture from a couple years ago. It shows my mother, my father, and my brother on the right there with his wife and their two kids. This picture is a couple years old now. They actually have a third child on the way. The one that he's holding is up walking, and she's about to start kindergarten.
Grandkids are wonderful.
But what this picture doesn't show is the rest of our staff. For example, I'm just joining the ministry this year, or rejoining it, I should say. Kelsey Babbitt has been working with us for a little while. She was here at the Bidwell's house with us. We also have the Hall family working with us. And then this picture also does not show, of course, the 20 Honduran staff that we have employed at our ministry, the 1,200 Honduran pastors and missionaries that we work with, and the 6,000 church leaders that we work with. We're counting Sunday school teachers, elders, deacons in that number. So a lot of people that we're working with. So what do these pastors, these 1,200 pastors, have? First off, they have a relationship with God, kind of necessary to be a pastor and a missionary. But they also have a farm to support themselves and their family. Most of our pastors live the same way that the people they minister to live. They're very poor. The pastor is frequently, in the morning he gets up at what time?
4 or 5 o'clock.
Four or five in the morning, works on his farm all day long, And then come 5 or 6 o'clock at night, he gets done, he goes home, he eats dinner, he cleans up, and then he's off to teach Bible studies all night, you know, till late in the night. And this includes, like, walking from his house to whatever location he's teaching the Bible study, because most of them do not also own vehicles. He might be walking several miles to do these Bible studies. And that's where we come in and where you guys, our partners, come in. These pastors are seeing 15,000 professions of faith each year. We would like to emphasize that these professions of faith go on to become disciples. These pastors are working with the people in their own village, in their own neighborhood, and they are continuing to minister to them and helping them to grow in God. So these are not just people saying the sinner's prayer and then disappearing and never being seen in the church again. These people go on to become disciples. Our pastors are seeing, the pastors we partner with are seeing an average of, they're planting 50 new churches each year on average. So how do we help them with that? What is our game plan for assisting them with this? So one of the things we do is we run a pastor's training school. We are not teachers. We don't teach. But we do help facilitate a pastor's training school to help improve the pastor's education. Most of these pastors, at best, have a sixth grade education. A lot of them have even less than that. We have a couple of pastors that cannot read at all. So pastor's training school is also to help them with their biblical knowledge, because most of them, all of their biblical knowledge just comes from what they've read. So they have no training beyond that. So pastor's training school, we've had 125 pastors who have graduated from our three-year training program. We've had hundreds of pastors and church leaders that attend pastor's training conferences, and then we have about 80 pastors that are enrolled at this moment in this training school. The next way we help them is purchasing study materials. Any study materials are extremely expensive in Honduras, and these people are very poor. So for most of them, purchasing, say, a good study Bible would be about a month's wages for them if they were to go into the big store in the big city and buy it there. We sell these Bibles at wholesale prices for about a quarter of the price, so it still costs them about a week's wages, but it's a significant reduction in price, and it makes it more accessible to them. Here's a picture of my brother. He's the one in the orange shirt on the right. Here is a picture of him selling Bibles at pastor's training school. Another way we help the Honduran churches is we help them in building churches. We have a rule, we don't build the church building. We want the people to feel a sense of ownership and a sense of responsibility for their own church building. So we usually come in and help them finish the building. So usually we have them put up the walls. Usually it's mud brick. It's just labor intensive, not a lot of money. It's just a lot of labor. And then we will put the roof on. It usually costs us about $1,000 to put a roof on a church. This particular church building you see here is actually one of the bigger churches we've done. It's a two-story concrete building. Here's a more traditional church building with the mud brick and the terracotta tile. We've done about 160 church buildings, all helping the local congregations with that. We also help pastors purchase motorcycles, horses, and mules. So you can see we've done approximately 72 horses and mules, 295 motorcycles. The reason we do this is just, on average, when we help a pastor to buy either an animal or a motorcycle, that pastor usually goes on to plant at least one more new church. This is an average number. Some of them don't plant any more churches after that. Some of them go on to plant two or three new churches. So on average, we see over one new church planting for every animal or motorcycle.
Let me just add to that. It costs us about $1,000 to help them buy that motorcycle. So you're planning a church for about $1,000.
Here's a picture of a couple of pastors with their animals. I'd like to point out the one on the right to you. That one, his name is Josue. His right leg, he was born with a withered right leg. Before we met him, he was climbing mountains to plant churches. He currently has 8 churches. Correct, that he was walking to on crutches to minister to these different, to be the pastor of these different churches. It was so bad that sometimes and Honduras is extremely mountainous, so he'd be walking along on crutches. He'd get to a part of the mountain that was too steep for him to walk on because of his withered leg, and he'd start crawling. So by getting him this horse, we were able to make his life a lot easier and help him to grow the number of churches he was ministering to. So
it cost us about $250 to get that horse.
We also do bridge building and clean water projects. Clean water projects are just that. It's helping communities obtain access to clean water. Usually we do that in conjunction with the local government. We've done about 26 clean water projects.
Yes.
And how many bridges?
32.
32 bridges. So the bridges are slightly different. So the reason we do bridges, a lot of our rivers get swollen during rainy season. They flood, and then children will try and cross them. We don't know. We don't have an exact number. We just know that a large number of children die each year trying to cross a flooded river. The other thing is someone who maybe needs medical attention can't get it because the river is flooded. They can't cross the river, or they have to go hours and hours around the river, and by the time they get to health care, it's too late. So by building these bridges, we increase safety and we increase their access to health care. It also helps them economically because now they have access to the big city. They can come in and sell their goods. They can get access to, you know, over-the-counter medications, stuff we take for granted on a daily basis, stuff that they can't get normally. Next thing is we do pastor's gifts. We like to call these gifts pastor appreciation gifts, but they're also kind of empowerment gifts because they'll include things like basic household items, linens, clothes, stuff the pastor would have a hard time earning up to buy on his own, and by giving him these, we save him some time and energy. We do about 340 a year. These gifts will also include a backpack for every child in the pastor's family. The reason we do this is many of our pastors are second generation. So we have a sneaking suspicion that if we help their children go to school, the next generation of pastors and church leaders will be that much better educated. So we're hoping that'll be give us some well-educated pastors in the future, or at least better educated. Another thing we do, Sours for Pastors, we believe that if you give us money, you give us, say, even a penny, and say, I want this penny to go to feeding a child, we want to make sure that that penny only goes to feeding a child. So if you give us money for feeding kids, none of that money is going to go into, say, advertisements or supporting us. All of our American staff, with the exception of one who's a part-time employee, all of our American staff raises their own funds separately. And we, in our family, the Sours family, we are tent makers. We have a coffee farm with 100,000 trees on it, 50 acres of land. We also use this coffee farm to support local employment. And also a part of it, what is it? How much of it goes to ministry?
It's 50-50.
It's 50-50. Some of it also goes back into the ministry to support the ministry. And there's just a picture of the cute little coffee plants growing in shade in the nursery. So little baby coffee plants. Now I'm going to hand this back to my dad.
So we arrived in Gracias in late 2005, and I met Dr. Julio, and I had this vision of working with 50 pastors, and Dr. Julio kind of took me under his wings. He was a indigenous missionary, medical doctor, had been trained to train pastors. He was getting ready to go down to Peru, and that kind of fell apart on him. And so he was looking for a ministry to tie into, and he said, why don't we go out and we'll do some things together? And so we grabbed up our shoeboxes, and we were receiving these shoeboxes at the time, and we said, let's go into the mountains and let's see how many pastors we can meet. And we met 180 pastors in the first 2 months that we were there in Gracias. So all of a sudden, the number 50 was kind of blown out of the water. And then about that time, his brother-in-law said to me, he said, Alan, would you come along with me? I'd like to take a day's trip. And I'd like to take you out, and I'd like to introduce you to 12 kids. These 12 kids are not thriving. They're not doing well. And that day, we went out to meet 12 kids that were not thriving. They were not doing well.
It had been about a month since he'd been up to see them.
And so we went out there to visit these kids. And as we're going along and he's talking about these kids and how, like my daughter said, they had been about actually about almost 2 months, but we went out there and we went to visit these kids, and we got there to the first house, and the mother came out and she came to meet us, and Rodrigo went to introduce us, and of the three kids that we were at that particular house, two of them had already passed away. And you're sitting there, and you're sitting beside the grave of the little child, and it's about yay big, you know, first grade, and right beside it's next grave, and it's about yay big. And you're sitting there, and you're looking at their sibling, and you're sitting there thinking, you know, if we don't do something, that sibling's going to die too. And as the day progressed, we went from house to house to visit these kids. And as we were going from these houses, from one house to the next, of the 12 kids we went out to visit that day, six had already passed away. And all of a sudden we knew that our ministry had another aspect. It was a ministry of compassion. It was a ministry of helping the needy. We didn't have that in our original calling or in what we thought our original calling was. Our calling was just to come out there and serve and help empower the pastors, but we didn't know that part of that empowerment was going to be feeding those kids. And so we started some feeding programs, and we specialized, first of all, in feeding those malnourished children that we had just met, and then it started growing, and pretty soon we were up, and we had 500 kids we were feeding, and we were raising support, and about that time somebody said, you know, you're going to run out of resources, and I was having a hard time raising the support to feed kids fortified meals, and so we took those meals out to these different locations, and we were distributing them, and somebody said, well, you're getting ready to take a trip up to Maryland. Why don't you swing by Minnesota and see how Minnesota is right next door to Maryland? We just swung over there, and we met with this group, and I talked them into giving me a pallet of food. And they said, yeah, on a pallet of food, there's 12,000 meals on this one pallet of food. And I thought, wow, that's great. And I got back to Honduras, and I said, oh, wow, you know, I'll have 12,000 meals. And so I started checking with, you know, what's going to cost me to ship it down there. And the guy says, well, it's going to cost you about $1,000 to get it down, shipped down through immigration customs. But, this is a big but if you ship a whole container of food, it's going to cost you $4,000. I said, well, how many pallets come in a container of food? He said, well, about 24 pallets of food. And so then I started doing the math, and we figured it out. It was going to cost us about a penny a meal. And about that time, the ministry that we were working with, our umbrella group, came along, and they said, "Why don't you do a promotion? We'll do a promotion with you. A penny a meal. What a deal!" And so we started doing that, and our feeding program kept growing and kept growing, and pretty soon we were up to 14,000 kids we were feeding twice a week. Next picture, please. And it was growing along, and we were at about 14. We had gotten up to about 14,000. This was a few years ago, and things were going really well. And this spring, as we were gearing up for school, our school year starts February 15th. So all the pastors were coming in to get their food and really gearing up. We go from about 8,000 kids or so that we're feeding twice a week during the off. During the vacation, back up to 14,000 kids twice a week. But we noticed there was this increase, and it just kept coming, and it kept coming. And suddenly we realized, wait a minute, there's something more going on. And sure enough, there was. And what it was all the people that had been laid off in the big cities, who usually send money back to help back in the compounds, back in the bush, were not able to do that because of COVID. And so all of a sudden, next thing we knew, we had 100,000 meals we passed out in 7 days. And we're like, you know, we went from 28,000 meals to 100,000 meals that we passed out. And so I got on the phone real quick. We had just missed a container. Fortunately, in God's provision, we had 800,000 meals sitting on the ground whenever this thing first started. But we were going through them like, you know, like water. I mean, we were just running through these meals like crazy. And we're like, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? And so we sat there and we said,
I got on the phone with a group, and they said, well, yeah, we'll help you out. You know, I think we can get a container down to you in the spring of 21. I'm like, we're in trouble. Spring of 21. He said, well, it might be the summer of 21. And so I got on the phone with the group that had been helping us for the last 14 years, and I called them, and I begged like a three-year-old child. I mean, like a three-year-old child in a candy store or in a toy store. I sat there and I said to him, please, 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 whatever you can send us, we are desperate down here. We are going through the food so fast. And so we were able to talk to Food for Kids with a Z into sending us a container. They had about six pallets that were already packed, and they had about eight pallets that were unpacked, and then they had some oatmeal that was actually going to be used for North Americans, and they said, would you take oatmeal? And I said, we'll take anything. You know, we've got starving kids. And so we were able to get that container down. As the numbers reflect, we are partnering right now currently with about 300 pastors. About 100 of those pastors just deliver the food by hand because they're kind of like you guys. They're not able to actually have feeding centers at their sites. And then we have about 200 feeding centers running right now. But what's happened is in this short time, what's happened is we've gone from a point where we were feeding 14,000 kids twice a week to feeding almost three times that many kids. And at the same point, at the same time, the cost of food, because now there is no free food. These groups used to give us all this food for free. Now there is no food for free. We actually have to pay for this food. And so our price has gone up, so it's three times as expensive as it used to be. Instead of paying $8,000 to ship it down to Honduras, now it cost us $24,000 for the food and $8,000 to ship it. Now we're up to $32,000. So you're looking at, you know, almost four times as much to three times as many kids. You're talking more than 10 times as much for the food this year. We're looking at a year where we will spend probably an extra $100,000 feeding these kids. But at the same point, what do you do whenever you're sitting there looking in a kid's eyes, or you're talking to the pastor and he's breaking down in tears and he's sharing the story of how the impact is impacting his community so much? Next picture, please. One of our sister sponsorship programs, just like your all's. Next picture, please. A couple pastors picking up for the feeding centers. Next picture, please. Next picture, please. Next picture. We run a sister sponsorship program. You guys are part of that. We have a open sponsorship program, which is more like Compassion. Just FYI, right now, Compassion and World Vision have both temporarily laid off all their people down in Honduras. Meantime, we have all our pastors sitting on the ground going out there checking on our kids because they felt like it was not safe for their people to go out there and check on the kids during this time. We actually have our pastors, because they're members of the community, checking on the kids and checking to make sure that the kids are doing well and are thriving. We went backwards, basically, in my way of thinking. We went backwards 14 years back to that day where I saw those six kids who had passed away. I went back to the starving children.
We were having pastors show up that we hadn't seen in years, because they'd said, you know what, we're good. Our community's gotten over whatever the crisis was, whatever the reason was that they were having trouble getting themselves fed. And those pastors said, I don't need food. I'll see you guys around. They're back, and they're begging for food. So people he's never met before are coming and saying, hey, I heard you guys have food. Do you have food?
I had a pastor who showed up, and he showed up, and he had 169 kids signed up, and I was going through his log, and we keep a log on all the pastors, you know, how many kids are feeding, and we went back over, and, you know, 2 years ago, he was feeding 36 kids, and then, you know, you see, like, okay, he was feeding 38, and then he was feeding 40, and then he was feeding 42, and last time he came in, he was feeding 42 kids, and this time he comes in, he's feeding 169 kids. I said, brother, what happened? He says, like, every kid in town is showing up for our feeding center. He says, every single kid in our town is showing up to our feeding program. I want to mention this church right here. This is Mercedes. Whenever we started our feeding center, I don't know whether this will slide. Will it slide? It's sticking. It's supposed to slide sideways
and show all of the kids. The picture is about three times longer than it's showing.
But anyhow, we started with Mercedes in 2006, a feeding program, and we had 30 kids with them. And in 2014, whenever we started our sponsorship program with them, we had 180 kids in the sponsorship. Today, we have 360 kids in the sponsorship program there at Mercedes. So in 14 years, they've gone from 30 to 360 kids. Let me repeat that. In 14 years, they've gone from 30 kids in their sponsorship program to 360 kids in their program there. It's a real exciting time. Next picture, please.
We would like to emphasize the way we run our sponsorship program is through our pastors, by and large. So we're not just feeding these kids physically. That's just, at some point, that's a draw, you know, a hook. Our pastors also work with them on a spiritual level. It's kind of, you know, it's a way of connecting our pastors with these kids and tying our two ministries together, pastor support and the child sponsorship programs.
I'm sorry, how much time do I have, brother? 12 minutes. All right, man, I got all kinds of time. My daughter did a really good job, didn't she? She covered the ministry really fast and didn't get bogged down, so I've got a couple minutes. I'm going to tell you one more story. So we're at one of our sister sponsorship programs, and everything's going around. Russell, like crazy, he's my older son, for those of you who don't know. He's kind of the guy that's taking over. He's kind of, you know, almost pushing me aside. No, I'm sorry. but he's taking over. So Russell is sitting there, and he's running around. And you know, we've got the kids getting registered, and then they're coming through, and they're picking up their shoes, and then they're going over there, and they're picking up their backpacks. And, of course, you got to keep them corralled because you dare not let them get out of there. Or if you do, they're going to run out of there without getting their picture taken. And, of course, the sponsors, they want what? The picture. Because you just you want to see that your kid actually got their backpack. And about that time, in walks this gentleman, and he comes over to me and he says, is it true that we can get backpacks for our kids? And is it true that we can have a pair of shoes for our kids if we enroll them in the program? I said,
so that they can go to school.
And he said, my wife and I, we have four kids that are school age. We made about $1,200 this year. We were doing the math, and we said we just can't afford to send all three kids. It costs about $100 to send a kid to school. And so we were sitting there, and we were going, okay, do we keep Juan Jr. being the oldest of his kids, in school? He's doing really well. He's thriving in school. He's getting ready to enter fifth grade. Should we keep him in school, or should we let Maria go to kindergarten? She would be the youngest, and we're making this choice. And so we decided to leave Maria out. We would let her just skip kindergarten. But then the problem is going to be next year, because next year Juan Jr. would have the chance to go to sixth grade. And sixth grade is a benchmark in Honduras. It's kind of like saying high school here in America. You have to think kind of like 1880s, okay? So it's kind of a benchmark. And if Juan Sr. is sitting there telling me, if Juan Jr. graduates from sixth grade, he will be the first one in our entire extended family, counting all my cousins and all their kids, and all my second cousins and all their kids, and as anybody I know that's from my family who has ever graduated from sixth grade. And he says, so we were sitting there looking at down the decision next year, do we send Juan Jr. on to sixth grade, realizing that Juan Jr. is really doing well in sixth grade. We in America do not understand. We have no concept of real need. I was recently talking to a gentleman, and he was sitting there, and he was joking about it, but he was saying, he said, I told my kids that, you know, we can't pick the corn before it's fully grown, but I've been letting them just go out there, and each day they can pick one, you know, piece of corn, and they can eat the corn. And he says, I was sitting there watching, and, you know, normally whenever you eat baby corn, you eat like baby corn. He said, I noticed my kids, they went out there, and what they were doing was they were picking the biggest corn that they could pick, and they were eating it, corn, cob, and all. And I talked to a dietitianist, and she was sitting there telling me, she says, you know, a lot of these 10-year-old boys are living on 600, 800 calories a day. And they're sitting there, and that's what they're living on. So we are in a time of crisis, and I'm here to say thank you. Thank you for being part of that. Thank you for being part of the people that stood up and are stepping up to answer this time of crisis. Sitting there talking about the food that you guys are getting ready to pack. Monica, thank you. As Monica was getting ready to, was talking about the food that you guys are getting ready to pack, thank you for doing that. Thank you for being part of that. Thank you for feeding these malnourished kids in Honduras who are living on 600, 800 calories a day. I will say things are starting to get better. The gardens are starting to come in. Things are gradually increasing. But having gone through 6 or 8 months of borderline starvation, you know, where kids who are 10 years old have lost 10 pounds in this time frame when they should have been gaining maybe 5 pounds. You know, they're down 15 pounds from where they should be. This is a real time of crisis that we are going through right now. If I could have the next picture, please. Oh, shoot. With stone backpacks. Okay. So I want to thank you for filling the backpacks, for helping these kids go to school. As I mentioned, a lot of these kids can't go to school without this help. I want to thank you for being part of empowering Pastor Marvin to reach out. Pastor Marvin, who was offered a superintendent's position, actually moved out of his area, went out and was a supervisor over 20 other pastors. And at some point after having been out there for about 4 or 5 years, he felt called to come back to his own people, because he felt like his own people were not being taken care of. And he says, there's a lot of guys that want to be the supervisor here in this town, but there's few guys that want to go to my village and be the pastor in my village. And so your pastor, Pastor Marvin, your partner, Pastor Marvin, has this heart to carry the gospel to the people there around him. And I just want to encourage you as you're sitting there and you're thinking about, you're packing the backpacks and you're packing the food and you're helping in this manner. I want you to be thinking about what it is that we are trying to accomplish. I want us to think about kingdom building with a big K. Okay? Kingdom building with a big K, not kingdom building with a small K. And how Marvin's dedication to kingdom building with a big K is so important to him that he would give up a position as a supervisor over 20 other pastors so that he could return to his own community to help build the kingdom of God. Next picture, please. All the way down. Oh, please. Yep. So again, thank you so much. I can't tell you enough what it means to us to be able to partner with you, to be just part of this relationship, not just you partnering with us, but you partnering with Pastor Marvin through us, you empowering Pastor Marvin. We're just the conduit, the people that are making the connection. We're just the people that are making you able to tie in with Pastor Marvin there on the ground. Next picture, please. I want to thank you for being the kind of people that did not say, well, go out there, you know, be well, you know, have a great day. But you actually cared enough about the people down there in Honduras. For being the kind of people that stored up your treasures in heaven and not here on earth. For being the kind of people that said, you know, there are hungry. There are neighbors. There are people that are down there in Honduras, and many of you will never, most of you will never meet a lot of these people down there. But you have the opportunity in the upcoming weeks to pack a meal. And so we're so excited for you to get the chance to do that. And I want you to think as you're packing
those meals out there. What are you doing it for? What is the reason? And yes, we are feeding the kids physically. Absolutely. But more important than that is something more important than feeding them physically. We're feeding them spiritually. We're partnering with Pastor Marvin to enable him, to empower him to feed those kids spiritually. Next picture, please. Again, thank you so, so much.